Hello, I would like to welcome our listeners to a special episode of Crossroad Podcast. I'm Siddesh Mayankar, senior reporter at ION Group's North America coverage. I would be your host today. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to invite our guest today. He's Jose Antonio Moran, principal at Baker McKenzie in Chicago. He focuses on financing on energy and infrastructure projects. Welcome to the show, Jose.
Thank you so much, Siddesh. It's a pleasure being here. And I look forward to our conversation this morning.
Today, we're going to talk about various important and interesting topics, such as the impact of President Biden's signature legislations, IRA, post the US elections, and other regulations concerning ESG and tax equity. Do you anticipate IRA being repealed or FERC's key policies changing in the next year, given the current climate in Washington?
That's a great way to start. I think it's a question that a lot of people have been posing to their lawyers, advisors. My personal opinion, frankly, Siddesh, is that it would be difficult to repeal the IRA as it is being enacted right now in the US. There has been a lot of growth with respect to renewable energy and renewable projects in many states where the governments governing the states are Republican. So there's a significant stakeholder interest right now with respect to the investments made. For example, this past year in 2023, Texas was the state with the most new solar and wind capacity installations and the second with respect to battery storage. So the way I see this is that the IRA basically will stay for a while.
Yeah, interesting. Could you tell me a bit more about the ESG and antitrust, you know, have been the sticky points as far as the M&A landscape is concerned? What is the likely future of, you know, uniform federal ESG standards or reporting requirements?
That's a great question. I mean, I think that you move to the ESG standards to date. Basically, there has not been a concerted push in the U.S. to codify any ESG standards or reporting requirements through legislation by Congress. However, on March 6, the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, approved disclosure requirements for certain publicly traded companies regarding their carbon emissions and other climate change risks. And the way that the SEC came about this regulation is by requiring more rules under different type of regulations. And those were the scope one, scope two. Scope one relates to direct emissions that are owned or controlled by a company. So a company that creates the emissions and controls the emissions has to provide disclosure schedules at what the SEC described as scope one. And then scope two, it's more indirect emissions that come from where the energy is being produced. So if a company that is publicly traded basically purchases energy from a third party, which is normally the case, then they need to look at how is that energy being produced. There were also some further sets of rules that were even more indirect, and that was the scope three. However, those requirements basically, which mainly related to supply chain. So creditors, the providers, the individuals that were providing basically equipment or raw material to that company that is publicly traded had to report on the actual emissions from those providers. Right now, scope three is out of the question for now. But again, together with the U.S. federal regulation, which is the SEC regulation. Companies also need to focus on what California has enacted. In California, the enactments of ESG regulation have been broader than basically what the SEC provided, and they include in scope three, so they go more to the indirect. So that has been basically, or that is right now, the forecast or the plan going forward. A stricter SEC oversight, Siddesh, over ESG reporting is likely to protect investor rights and ensure uniformity of disclosures. Obviously, the SEC since 2021 has also focused on prosecuting ESG-related misconduct, the so-called greenwashing, and bringing enforcement actions and levying fines. So that, in my opinion, is, you know, how the landscape with respect to federal ESG standards and reporting requirements looks like.
Yeah, sure. Let's now a little bit deeper into this ESG, which is my favorite topic for the benefit of our listeners. You know, talking about ESG and other major M&A deal that has happened in the recent past, you know, what sort of impact these deals would have on the renewable space?
Well, this is a great question, Siddesh, and obviously this is in the forefront of every transaction, and I think at every board level, at least within energy companies, and I know that it goes beyond energy companies. In the energy space, obviously, we have seen a trend of big institutional investors acquiring platforms to invest in energy transition, renewables infrastructure. At the same time, some oil majors seem to be retrenching somewhat with their investments in renewables. And again, these types of transactions may allow new participants to enter the market or existing participants to further strengthen their position. I believe that if we look at what has happened in the last few years, there has been a consolidation trend in the renewables industry over the last few years. And what is really interesting is that instead of single asset deals for projects that have achieved notice to proceed or commercial operation, transactions involving portfolios of multiple renewable energy projects have dominated the market due to the economies of scale, efficiency with respect to transaction costs, and obviously with a variety of technologies. So when you look at these transactions, they're not just focusing on solar or wind. They're doing basically both, and obviously bringing in also battery storage, bringing in also other types of investors. The typical tax of investors in the US will be tax equity, but also cash equity. The cash equity investors are generally a layer up in the capitalization structure of the company. So I think that the time basically in the US for Wild West post notice to proceed and operating solar, wind, and battery storage projects is likely over, and only major industry players will be able to secure competitive financings and tax equity. Also, when we look at supply chain and relationships with large providers, those large investors are able to manage their global supply chain in a way that helps them satisfy sometimes certain bottlenecks. And in some cases, they're able to delay projects in some regions of the world and accelerate the supply in others. That's how I see, you know, the ESG with respect to recent major M&A deals and how sprinkled the ESG concept becomes.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for that, Hussein. And another aspect that has been the talk of the town has been the tax equity. You know, how are developers and investors taking advantage of tax equity financing? And how big is this really the market of tax equity, and, you know, how big it would become?
It's a very interesting market and a very interesting incentive, especially when you look at other regimes. Who would have thought that the biggest investors in renewable energy in the US are the largest taxpayers? And the reason for that, obviously, is that they can accumulate tax credits provided under the Internal Revenue Code to lower their tax liability. The Inflation Reduction Act, what it did basically in a way is supercharge the tax equity market by providing more predictability for the availability of the tax credits. In past years, tax credits were approved, but they were always approved almost on New Year's Eve. So that was very hard for the actual investors and developers because they were always approved in the last minute. Now there's more predictability because now the investors know that they are available for the next few years. And in many cases, they will be running through 2034. And also the other big element of the IRA is that they are providing these new tax credits are providing more flexibility and opportunities for other individuals to participate in the market or to benefit basically from the tax credits through what it's called the transferability. Now, tax credits could be transferred once to third parties. Those third parties can purchase those at a small discount. And the most interesting piece of that is that the purchasers that may buy the tax credits obviously could apply those in their tax return, do not need to be involved with an actual energy project. They don't need to be a shareholder together with the developer, like the traditional tax equity holder used to be. So that's, in my opinion, has been one of the most interesting characteristics. So the transferability of tax credits basically unlocked basically a huge market bottleneck and allowed basically more people to come in into this market. What I think also is quite important right now when you look at the legislation, the IRA, is that it provides tax credits obviously for production. There are also other mechanisms such as the direct pay, which allows tax-exempt entities, tribal and native entities, rural energy cooperatives, and governmental entities to receive a payment equal to the full value of the tax credits for basically developing qualifying clean energy projects. also the other thing that a lot of people is talking about, and there are already projects taking place, is that there are additional now incentives for hydrogen production. The production of electricity through hydrogen has a tax credit, and also for carbon capture and storage projects under the IRA. It's basically focused on trying to transition, frankly, you know, from fossil fuels to renewable energy, and in some cases, you know, doing the carbon capture, you know, if you're still operating, you know, under fossil fuel technologies. So again, the plan is here to basically transition and be able to replace the capacity installed in the US into a more diverse pool of electricity.
That's fantastic, Jose. There has been the talk of town, you know, in terms of the tax equity. You know, how are developers and investors taking advantage of this tax equity financing structure, and how big is this market, you know, of tax equity, and how would it become?
All right. Well, so in my opinion, the IRA has supercharged the tax equity market. By that, what do I mean? I mean that, one, it has provided more predictability for the availability of tax credits over the next few years, with many running through 2034. In the past, tax credits were generally approved in the last sessions of Congress, and those were almost approved at the end of the year, so there was not much of a horizon for the investors and the developers. But now, also, this supercharging includes providing more flexibility and opportunities for new market participants. What do we mean by that? We really mean transferring the tax credits to potential investors, and in this case, individuals that basically will be applying the tax credits in their consolidated tax returns without being shareholders or without becoming involved with the actual development, operation, or maintenance of the project. So you can have any big corporate that needs to pay taxes can be offered tax credits. They can buy those tax credits. There's currently a slight discount on the purchase price. It's $1 for $1. And basically, that's what we have seen. There are different ways, obviously, to monetize the tax credits under IRA, and it will depend, obviously, on the investor's tax appetite and also some of the accounting rules with respect to depreciation and the step-up basis. But basically, today, in today's world, thanks to the IRA, tax credits are directly bought and sold by a purchaser and seller, and there's a market for that. That market did not exist before the IRA. Again, there are new opportunities for other types of projects, including that do not include tax credits, and that's the direct pay. So I wanted just to share some thoughts on that. Direct pay allows for basically receive direct funds equivalent to the amount of tax credits, and that it's open for tax-exempt entities, tribal and native entities, rural energy cooperatives, and governmental entities, so they can receive the full value of the tax credits for building qualifying clean energy projects. That means basically projects that have been described in the regulations. And in addition, obviously, there are additional tax credits for hydrogen production and carbon capture and storage projects.
You know, we have this ongoing conflicts in Ukraine and in the Middle East. What's the impact these events would have on U.S. power markets and M&A activity here?
So here in the U.S., and obviously with respect to M&A activity, as a result basically of these geopolitical issues and tensions, there has been a greater sensitivity with respect to electricity supply and also fuel price volatility, as well as maintaining access to fuel supply. The U.S. hasn't been directly affected by, obviously, the gas or the shortage of gas coming from Russia. The U.S. has developed over the last few years, you know, the shale gas industry that has permitted the U.S. to become an exporter of gas. So, and obviously, we've also relied on our good friend neighbors, the Canadians, and Canadian gas that has always been transported and brought into the U.S. At the same time, I think there's a question whether more local energy production from renewable energies, renewable resources, could provide more insulation from these price shocks. I think that, and this is my personal view, I mean, the gas market is going to stay with us together with the growth of energy, of renewable energy. But obviously, there are countries that depend heavily on the import of fossil fuels, primarily natural gas for power generation. We see that obviously in Latin America. We also see that in countries in Europe that decided basically to perhaps concentrate most of their supply chain with respect to fossil fuels. But on the other hand, I think that in the US, what we're seeing is that there will be more investments in renewables. That will obviously help to accelerate the M&A activity and at the end of the day, also consolidation within that market. So as I mentioned before, I think that bigger players will consolidate. There will still be some developers, smaller developers. But I think that perhaps in 5 years from now, the market is going to look much different. Not sure there will be like the developers that we're seeing now bringing projects to fruition. I think they will be like large multi-utilities doing this kind of work.
Another question that I wanted to ask you is about, you know, Biden's recent pause on LNG exports. You know, how do you think it will impact the investment in the downstream sector?
In today's market, I think that that is something that was expected. I mean, when we look at the FERC composition right now, the nomination of three new FERC commissioners could reshape the dynamics, I think, on a number of topics, including obviously the exportation of gas. But the reality is that the exports of gas from the US have been a success. Many foreign multi-utilities and sometimes their gas trading arms have bought billions of cubic meters of American gas produced basically in the different areas in the US. And that industry, again, has developed an entire backbone from pipelines to transportation to liquefaction terminals, export terminals. So I think that the Biden administration nominated two Democratic commissioners, one Republican commissioners, all of whom have different experiences in the energy sector. But the reality is that there's an industry behind that. And I don't expect for that to, again, to decrease. Why? Because, again, not every country is at the same level, Sidesh, of development with respect to energy transition, and fossil fuels and natural gas will still be considered as a necessary source. And therefore, the U.S. will have the ability to basically provide those licenses to export, you know, the gas that is produced and in the U.S.
That was insightful, as I'd expected. Thanks for coming in, Uze.
Thank you so much, Hidesh, for spending the time with me this morning. It's been a pleasure.
Please support our podcast with a like, subscribe, repost, or share. This is your host signing off. Bye for now.